live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about a particular berry. It's called the blushwood berry, and it does something absolutely unique. And this is from the Medical Institute of Australia. I think you'll find this very interesting. And then how honeysuckle tea, and I used to make and still do, I make honeysuckle tea from fresh picked honeysuckle, and they give off that wonderful aroma at night. They're a night bloomer. Well, they fight the flu. And this is from Nanjing University in China. And then black currant nectar. That's the concentrate of the black currant. It benefits you if you want to have a longer, better exercise. This is the University of Incarnate down in Texas. And then we have indigo rose tomatoes. They contain an antioxidant that fights diabetes, cancer, and neurodegenerative disease. Now, this is brand new, and this is the University of Oregon. And we always like to give you way ahead of the curve information from credible sources. And leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N, now has been able to shown, get this, to reverse uncontrolled diabetes type 1. Nothing else could do that. And 2. This is from Yale University, as well as Howard Hughes Medical Institute. So this is really revolutionary news for anyone who's type 1 diabetic. And also worry, jealousy, and moodiness, they're linked to higher risks of Alzheimer's in women, University of Gothenburg, and more. Then I'm going to spend a little extra time today on our environmental issues, especially a report that I found very important from Dar Jamal, Climate Disruption's Legacy, What We're In For Now, Going Forward, Mega Droughts, Extinctions, and the Obituaries of the Reefs. So we're going to look at the earth, we're going to look at the air and fires, and then why are we not doing more about it? Also, a commentary from Jeffrey Sachs from the Boston Globe today on the fatal expense of American imperialism, and from Gwen Dyer from Common Dreams, we're in for a wild ride. So I'll be sharing my own insights and commentaries, and also the latest on sea level rise. It's faster than what anyone anticipated. Quote, the Atlantic coast will be hit the hardest. And this is from Scientific American. And this was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So no longer can any responsible, reasonable person deny that we have got to get into a different mindset, get out of our comfort zone, and look for positive solutions, as many of us are. In fact, I'm going to be in the next, I have multiple issues that I'm dealing with, but one is showing people how to build a completely unique and original greenhouse in their backyard. I'm making it the size of the average person's backyard. And then how I'm designing it inside, and I'm photographing and filming each stage and then explaining it, will allow you to follow these for your own backyard or even your roof. Now, how much could you produce? Well, at any given time, a minimum in your backyard, a little backyard, 2,220 plants, not including sprouts. Those will be extra growing, and microgreens, which then bring it up well above 4,000 different things growing simultaneously every 30 days. Yeah, that'll feed a lot of people. In fact, one of the things I intend to do, visiting and helping out a Syrian refugee camp, is to build them a greenhouse and so they can become self-sufficient, as well as shipping them a lot of edibles, things for at least, hopefully, 6 months. So I'll show you how to do this, but this is the future because we're not paying attention as a society, but there are people who are looking and saying, okay, I don't have to be convinced anymore. I understand that I'm the problem if I have to have any more proof before I do something. So let's do it. Also today, my guest will be Gerald Celante, and every year, Gerald and I take a look at the trends that are coming ahead. And I'm going to be sharing some insights with Gerald about what I see the biggest single problem for American workers. It's not China, Bangladesh, Mexico, or India. Nope, there's another problem, and it's happening already, and no one is talking about it. Plus, from our audio files today, we're going to take a look at a couple of things I think are important. One is that we've been told that America only supports moderate rebels in Syria. Well, mind you, those moderate rebels were given free ticket out on buses along with any civilians who want to leave out of Aleppo. Now you have a chance to go into Aleppo since it's 100% free and listen to the people who were living there during the last 4.5 years of occupation by the ISIS and al-Nusra and other terrorists. What was it like? Were there moderate rebels? And you're going to hear from Ben Swan on this one. Also today, we're going to talk about how to become gluten intolerant, the ultra-spiritual episode. And, if time permits, what happens when we no longer think those emails are relevant? They are, and there's a lot more coming. Let's begin, since we have so much to cover. First up, sometimes people will hear something and write it down because they are not familiar with it. And then they'll go into their local health food store, and maybe they may or may not have it. But it's out there. You just have to do a little due diligence, and sometimes you just go up on the internet and track it down. This one is called Blushwood Berry, B-L-U-S-H-W-O-O-D. Why is it important? According to the Berghofer Medical Institute in Australia, it kills up to 75% of cancer cells. That is terrific. Many of the pharmaceutical industry's attempts to co-opt Mother Nature end up failing. When you see how many cancer-killing compounds are either suppressed or that are used in different ways only to make money for the drug that they're selling, their company. But why not just go directly to Mother Nature? Why not use something that fights cancer that's been there all along? Well, the fruit of the blushwood tree, which has very specific growing requirements and thus far has only been found to thrive in far north Queensland in the middle of the Australian rainforest. But there, when it's harvested, it's found to kill cancerous cells in three different ways, and it kills them very fast. Quote from an article based upon Dr. Glenn Boyle, who is the medical researcher at the Institute in Brisbane. It kills the tumor cells directly. It cuts off the blood supply, and it also activates the body's own immune system to clean up the mess that's left behind. End quote. Now, these results were discovered in an 8-year study led by Dr. Boyle and his research team. In 75% of cases, the cancer never returns. There were no side effects, and the compound started working in 5 minutes. You didn't mishear me. The cancer gets killed beginning in 5 minutes, making cancerous melanoma and neck tumors disappear in days. Now, these results prove yet another reason to protect the lush jungles that are dwindling due to deforestation, but also to restrict the ability of biotechnology and pharmaceutical companies from patenting anything that occurs in nature. And that's important. So, and by the way, the sea cucumber is found to kill 95% of cancer cells and shrink tumors. Quote from Dr. Boyle, "The surprising thing for us, and the thing that we don't see very often, is the speed with which this occurs. Usually when you treat a tumor, it takes several weeks for it to resolve. But this very, very rapidly occurs. there's a purpling of the area of the tumor itself, and you see within 5 minutes this occurring, and you come back the next day and the tumor's black, and you come back a few days later and the tumor's fallen off. The tree is apparently very picky about where it grows. Currently, as I mentioned, it's only seen on the Atherton Tablelands, and scientists are trying to expand different places for it to grow, but haven't been successful yet. So that's good news. That can save a lot of lives. Natural, non-toxic, kills quick, kills completely. Then we have something that can help us fight the flu. Honeysuckle as a tea. This is from Nanjing University, and it's published in Cell Research. Quote, scientists in China are claiming an extremely novel finding after moths fought off several types of flu when fed honeysuckle tisane. That's a tea. And this directly targeted, it turns out, the influenza A viruses. The scientists claim this is the first demonstration that a natural product can directly target a virus. It's not true. Vitamin C has been doing it for a long time, as has quercetin. I was actually at the Linus Pauling Institute where Dr. Jarwala showed me quercetin killing, right there in the dish, is killing HIV cells completely, 100%. So, no, there are other things that do it. They're just not aware of that. Quote, since Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin nearly a century ago, antibiotics have been developed to target various bacterial infections and have saved the lives of millions of people. Unfortunately, no natural product that is effective against viral infections has been identified so far. As the first natural product directly targeting the particular component of this virus in Chinese medicine, they have found it to be very effective, and that's the honeysuckle. I think it's terrific that they're finding honeysuckle has antiviral properties, but they're simply out and out wrong on the other. In fact, we would have people with Lyme's disease, Epstein-Barr virus, herpes 6, cytomegalovirus, all types of virus, pneumocystis, green pneumonia, and hepatitis B and C. And with high levels of intravenous vitamin C, and I mean high levels, on a very aggressive schedule, sometimes as much as 6 days a week, and they would be sitting there in those chairs for 4 hours at a time, they would be completely disease-free in an average of about 16 months. So, yeah. Unfortunately, when the Tri-State Healing Center, when the lease was up, and I decided I could not devote any more time to it. I devoted 10 years to it, 7 days a week, and millions and millions of dollars. I said, that's enough. And I sent that information out, protocols out, invited people in, and I don't know of anyone who picked up on it, which is unfortunate because that's an awful lot of people who are cured. But, of course, mainstream medicine wouldn't want you to know that because it would compete with their very toxic approach. Now, another thing that you should have, though it's not fresh in most places, is black currants. Red currants, black currants, yellow currants, white currants. They're different currants. They're extremely nutritious. But you can get them dried anytime and just throw a handful into a blender or into a salad or into a hot cereal. But then you want the most powerful. You want to get the extract of it. So they wick off, I'm guessing, around 40% to 50% of the water. And what you're left with is a real thick, dark, almost looks like oil. But it's not. Almost has a tar-like consistency. But it's very sweet. And that's black currant nectar. Here's the latest from the University of Incarnation, Texas. Quote, and this was published in the Journal of Dietary Supplements. Daily consumption of black currant nectar for 8 days may reduce muscle damage and inflammation after exercise. 16 ounces per day of the black currant nectar were associated with reductions in the activity of creatine kinase, a blood marker of muscle damage. So that's terrific. So that's one more thing we can use if we're exercising, get sore muscles. And from the University of Oregon, for people who want to fight diabetes, cancer, and neurodegenerative diseases, we have this. Indigo rose tomatoes contain an antioxidant that fights these. So not only do dark tomatoes, these are the very dark tomatoes, and some people don't want to eat them because they don't look red. They look purplish. But they also are healthier than normal red varieties. And the most nutritious is the indigo, I-N-D-I-G-O, rose tomato. And they're cultivated by breeding red and purple tomato plants. And you could do this yourself, by the way. You could graft a red tomato and a purple tomato together, and then you graft them. I like to use, I'll use a resin, and I can use a honey. I wipe the honey in between, then I use a resin of bee propolis on the outside, and then I put a tape around it, and that's how you graft. I've grafted a lot of stuff, and it's fun. And then what doesn't work, you learn from that, you take notes, and you keep trying it, and one day, gee whiz, it works. In any case, they're actually grafting broccoli sprouts to make them even more of a positive cancer fighter, more indole-3-carbinol, the active ingredient that fights cancer. So scientists bred purple tomatoes, which have very high levels of anthocyanins. That's the antioxidant that helps fight cancer, far more than a red tomato. Quote, there are some dark-colored tomatoes, but indigo rose is the only real black tomato, and it's the darkest that has ever been bred. It's not genetically modified or GMO-based, as many assume. People often get confused between GMO and hybridization, which farmers have been using to cultivate new plant varieties for thousands of years. And this new breed was the brainchild of Professor Jim Myers, University of Oregon, and it's now out there, so good for them. Remember, black tomato, healthiest. And finally, leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N, can reverse uncontrolled diabetes type 1 and 2. This is from Yale University and Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and is published in Nature Medicine. The leptin controls our appetite, but now we're finding it can actually reverse the high blood sugar that characterizes type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And type 1 diabetes, as we all know, is an autoimmune disease in which the body attacks the cells that produce the blood sugar-lowering hormone insulin. And type 2 diabetes is a condition in which the body becomes less sensitive to insulin, and both conditions result in elevated blood glucose levels. Now, the researchers found that leptin suppressed neuroendocrine pathways responsible for causing blood sugar levels to rise in the first place. And this was sponsored by the National Institutes of Health. So leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N, blocks blood sugar-boosting pathway, and that is good. So that's what I would suggest. Oh, and by the way, women who are anxious, jealous, or moody, or distressed end up with higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease later in life. And this was a 40-year-long study, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, which is the journal of the American Academy of Neurology. So they had not been looking. They've been looking at genetics, family history, head trauma, heart and blood risk factors, and education. That's where most of the Alzheimer's research is. They'd never looked at personality traits. And this really surprised them, that if you are a person suffering from any form of jealousy, moodiness, neuroses, or neurotic tendencies, if you express a lot of anger, guilt, envy, anxiety, you're going to end up hurting your brain. So one more reason for us to be able to take a step back, reevaluate how we feel about things, but then go to reason and not reaction. When you react, you're never going to be doing anything that's going to help you. When you reason, you can control the outcome of things much better. And finally, before we take our break, from our environmental segment today, I'm going to quote you from Dar Jamil from Truth Out. He says the following: look around, go outside your window. It doesn't take much effort to notice the radical changes happening to the planet if only one pays attention. And he mentioned that this just 2 months ago, the Earth passed a very significant point. We are now past the 400 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, and now that's permanent. That means that no one currently alive on the planet will ever again see an atmosphere on Earth with less than 400 parts per million. That's a major problem. And James Hansen and other experts show that the Earth is now the hottest it's been in 115,000 years, and they anticipate the oceans to rise substantially. Quote, we are watching a giant pieces of our planet biosphere die before our eyes. Recently, Outside Magazine ran a heart-wrenching piece titled Obituary, Great Barrier Reef, 25 million BC to 2016. More than one-fifth of the reef died in the last 12 months from bleaching. By the way, there's still some remaining, but it indicates how hot and how acid the waters of the ocean have become. In fact, just 6 months after the bleaching event wiped out one-fifth of the Great Barrier Reef, another report was released showing that the devastation on the northern half of the reef is worse than previously believed. Quote, on the reefs we've surveyed close to Lizard Island off the coast of Cooktown in far north Queensland, the amount of live coral covering the reef has fallen from around 40% in March to under 5% now. Whoa, it's 95% gone in just months. The Great Barrier Reef is not the only one to suffer. We've seen glaciers, ice fields, forests, lakes, rivers, and of course species. And the recent release UK State of Nature report shows 56% of all species in the United Kingdom have declined since 1970. And it's happening all over the world. In fact, we're seeing more extreme weather than has been shown anywhere on the planet in the last 136 years of record keeping. Even in late October, Arctic sea ice hit a new record daily low extent, underscoring the fact that this year's record low readings are 3 million square kilometers below the same day readings in 1981. That's huge. In fact, a recently published report on Earth's biodiversity revealed that global wildlife numbers have fallen by 58% in the last 40 years. The report, called the Living Planet Assessment, was by the Zoological Society of London and the World Wildlife Fund, also said that if trends continue, this decline will likely reach two-thirds among vertebrates in the next 4 years. Let me repeat that. If we do not reverse this, we're going to see most of the vertebrates on the planet dead in the next 4 years. The report confirms what many of us have been watching for a number of years now, that we are bearing witness to the collapse of wildlife. And we're so obviously living in the Anthropocene era in which humans exert the dominant influence over the Earth and its destiny. Quote, we are no longer a small world on a big planet. We are now a big world on a small planet where we have reached a saturation point. In fact, a report by the Audubon Society recently showed that vanishing summer sea ice in the Arctic is forcing Arctic birds into new ways of living as they adapt to warmer weather and shifting food sources. Some birds have been traveling further in order to find food since the sea ice is melting away, and while others are becoming prey to starving polar bears. In Hawaii, 7 species of bees native to the islands have become the first bees to be added to the U.S. federal list of endangered and threatened species. And so, look at our water. This month, the dramatic changes in water phenomena abound. A recently published study found that multi-decade mega droughts due to our actions, quote, are virtually certain across the U.S. Southwest. Perhaps this has already begun because in late October, over 120 million Americans, that's 28% of the population of the lower 48 states, were experiencing drought. Where did anyone know that? Where was that a major feature story? Where was that up for talking points in any of the presidential debates? Where did any original investigative report on 60 Minutes talk about how 120 million Americans are now living in extreme drought conditions, and it's only going to get worse? And California just entered its 6th year of this drought. And by the way, it's not just here. Things are looking grim for the Mediterranean region as well. Another study warned that even if the Earth only warmed 2 degrees, which is a laughably low estimate at this point, widespread desertification will overtake huge areas of this lush region and render the ecosystems there unrecognizable. So we're talking about Spain, Greece, Italy, France, Portugal. Yeah, the new desert bowl is coming. And then on the other end of that, you look at the extreme weather spectrum in Louisiana, and their sea levels are rising. Storms, worst storm in 500 years hit them, and nothing is being done. A report published in The New Scientist shows that islands around the world will only lose land, not only lose land around the coast, but also lose their fresh water supply. You see, as the water comes in at night and the tidal surges, it all doesn't go back in to the ocean. It goes into the subsoil, and that's where those aquifers are. And so you'll have fresh water that they're using now, polluted by salt water, and it's not drinkable. And these are small, poor islanders. They don't have the resources to create a desalinization plant. And also there's a report published in The New Scientist showing that islands are also going to be susceptible to everything being washed away. You won't have a place to land a plane. You won't have roads to drive on. So right now, there is no island, any of the Pacific islands that are outside of Hawaii, that smaller ones that are going to survive. And there's another study that shows the Western Antarctic ice sheet is being undermined by warm, dense salt water from below, and it's being destabilized, the entire shelf. Now, let me give you an idea why that's important. If that shelf breaks, that would increase the global seas by anywhere between 4 and 15 feet. 1 kilometer of ice has vanished in just the last 7 years, and there's nothing to indicate that this frightening trend will not continue. And sea level rise is already hammering low-lying Bangladesh, where the rise, as well as the intensifying tropical cyclones, have turned the drinking water into salt, making life there very challenging. In Bolivia, glaciers are melting so quickly that they are threatening to wash away entire towns, glaciers that have shrunk by nearly 50% in just the last 40 years. But this is where most Bolivians get their drinking water, and now that's all drying up, melting away. And underscoring that point, a story was published in Climate Central based on a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science shows that Hurricane Sandy's surge as extreme as it was, will also likely be a commonplace. That what we saw, the devastation, not from the hurricane itself, but the surge, that's going to be the new norm. And fires, big deal everywhere. Given that this year saw the hottest summer ever recorded, it comes as no surprise that there has been a preponderance of fires, many of which persisted well into the fall season and now into the winter season. Massive fires covering millions of acres across Russia prompted many residents to sign a petition of Vladimir Putin in which they complained of suffocating from the smoke. And in Australia, the Bureau of Meteorology recently released a report stating that that country is experiencing more extreme fire weather and hotter days than any time in their history. And in the United States, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science showed that our hot weather, which is behind the recent surge in wildfires across the United States, is due directly to increasing global temperatures. So it's only going to get worse. So what can we do about it? Stop living in denial. And especially at a time when a president and the entire cabinet are all climate deniers. So that means we, the people, have to take that responsibility upon ourselves and start to do things that are proactive to protect our environment and our lives. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Lost. Each time you pass my way, oh, how I long to take your hand and say, don't cry, I'll kiss your tears away. Hey, lonely girl, my lonely girl. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. And I'm finishing some very important documentaries. I'll be announcing when we'll be showing those so that you can have a chance to see them. And before we go to our guest, who's going to be with us shortly, I just want to play one thing to show you how much fake news we're given, especially when there has been no counterbalance to that. In other words, so the New York Times, we expect the Times to be non-objective on foreign policy issues or not telling us the truth about the actual unemployment rate, which is anywhere between 27 to 44% and not 4.8%. How could you be a reporter and report upon Syria and the justification for us doing all the bombing and supporting the terrorists there and not at least go there and speak with people? Well, because it's an agenda. But Ben Swan shows us about these so-called moderate rebels.
Well, 1 week ago, I told you that national media is not giving you the full story about what is happening in Syria, specifically that the Free Syrian Army and the so-called Syrian rebels, who have now lost control of eastern Aleppo, are not freedom fighters. They are, in fact, aligned with terror organizations. And while tens of thousands of you have voiced your support, some other media are asking me, where's the proof? Tonight, the proof in a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Well, as I told you, national media has framed the fight in Syria and for Aleppo as anti-Assad rebels against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. What they do not say is that throughout Syria, there are really only two groups fighting against Assad, ISIS and al-Qaeda. In fairness, that is a crude assessment. In reality, there are dozens of small militias and factions fighting Assad. The Free Syrian Army, it's always been made up of many different smaller groups, but for the sake of explaining how jihadists are actually the ones fighting Assad, we're going to refer to the Free Syrian Army here as if it is one group. The Free Syrian Army was formed in July of 2011, but within just 1 year, there were already widespread reports that al-Qaeda in Syria had infiltrated. In 2012, I became the first reporter to question President Obama directly about the U.S. arming a group that had members of al-Qaeda.
There's some concern about the U.S. funding the Syrian opposition when there are a lot of reports that al-Qaeda is kind of heading up that opposition. How do you justify the two?
Well, I share that concern. And so what we've done is to say we will provide non-lethal assistance to Syrian opposition leadership that are committed to a political transition, committed to an observance of human rights.
Well, while there were non-jihadist rebels in the original Free Syrian Army, they did not last long. 1 year later, in 2013, the CIA began delivering weapons to those Syrian rebels. The shipments began streaming into the country over the past 2 weeks, along with separate deliveries by the State Department of vehicles and other gear, a flow of material that marks a major escalation of the U.S. role in Syria's civil war. That was the Washington Post in 2013. But things only got worse, because while the weapons were flowing in, well, so were jihadists. And by September of 2013, London-based global defense consultancy group IHS Jane's reported that 10,000 of the estimated 100,000 insurgent fighters were linked to al-Qaeda. Another 30 to 35,000 belonged to powerful factions that were fighting for an Islamic State within a larger Middle East caliphate stretching from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean. Now, in addition to that, that report showed at least a further 30,000 moderates belonging to groups that have an Islamic character. That means that by late 2013, only 25 to 30,000 so-called rebel fighters were part of secular nationalist groups. Again, that's 25 to 30% of the rebel force that could be considered friendly to the West. 70 to 75% of forces against Assad in 2013 were jihadists. But that didn't stop the U.S. from sending funding and sending weapons. And with some members of Congress, like Senator Rand Paul, insisting that these rebels were jihadists, by 2015, the U.S. committed $500 million to find and train moderate rebels. Instead, by September, a major blow, 3,000 of the few remaining FSA fighters, they defected from the organization. They proclaimed their allegiance to ISIS. Those fighters belonged to multiple brigades that formed the conglomeration of the FSA. Also in 2015, the Pentagon publicly admitted that an additional 70 U.S.-trained Syrian rebels surrendered a weapons stockpile to al-Nusra. Fighters from Division 30, they surrendered to the al-Qaeda affiliate group after crossing into Syria over the Turkish border. And as for that $500 million moderate rebel training program, that was halted a week later when the Pentagon admitted it had only trained 4 or 5 fighters. Not 400 or 4,000, 4 or 5. And it was in 2015 when the International Business Times reported that the moderate movement in Syria could be officially considered dead. As of last week, when the last U.S.-backed rebel faction disbanded its members, joining extremist groups such as the Nusra Front, the al-Qaeda offshoot in the country. Some of the men joined a group called the Levant Front, a coalition of rebel militias that also have ties to al-Qaeda. And again, that was 2015. And yet, through 2016, weapons and funding from the West continued. In September of this year, 2016, the U.S. delivered 3,000 tons of weapons and ammo to fighters in Syria, including rocket launchers and anti-tank guided weapon systems. So what you need to know, it is a fact that since 2012, those so-called moderate rebels in Syria have been absorbed into al-Qaeda groups or pledged allegiance to ISIS. And for the past year, the moderates, they have been gone. So when media only calls these groups freedom fighters, and yet these fighters have pledged themselves to al-Qaeda and to ISIS, then no, make no mistake, they are not looking to make Syria free. They are looking to enslave it, as they have in so many other places. That's reality check. Let's talk about that.
Okay, now, I just want to share a few thoughts, and I'm going to ask my guest who's standing by, Gerald Celante, to share his thoughts. But here's what we now can say with accuracy. The American media, including Democracy Now! And some other programs in Pacifica, were strong advocates for the intervention in both Libya and in Syria. That there were no mainstream media, television, radio, like NPR, or any other press, that actually were objective and honest in their reporting. Now that Aleppo has been freed, and we're hearing from people that were in Aleppo, including some Canadian journalists in Aleppo, we're finding that mass graves where women and children's bodies have been found, mutilated, and tortured, not by Syrian forces, but by the so-called moderate rebels. The weapons they were using came from mostly the United States, vis-a-vis either Turkey or the Libyan mission, that there is Gaddafi, and Gaddafi was fighting these people. He was on our side, and yet we destroyed him for no good reason. We also found that Saudi Arabia had been, along with Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, had been funding these different terrorist groups. They had their own agenda. But now we see on the internet tens of thousands of people from Aleppo cheering, celebrating that the 4.5-year siege by the rebels is over. The murder of people, the living under such horrific conditions is over. They're happy. But you talk with John McCain, and he's always a travesty what happened in Aleppo. The travesty wasn't liberating Aleppo. That it was that the credit didn't go to the United States. It went to Russia and Syria. They would like, John McCain and all the other war hawks would like us to believe that the people were better off living under ISIS, waiting at some point in the future for a remedy from the United States after we get rid of Assad, than liberating it, and we didn't get credit. What a warped perspective from such an intellectually and spiritually diminutive person. Now let's go over to my guest, Gerald Celante. He is one of the pioneers in trend studies. He founded the Trends Research Institute in Kingston, New York. He's a publisher of the Trends Journal, and he has a program, very popular program. In fact, it went from like 58th up to number 3 in popularity on the Progressive Radio Network, right behind mine and Utrecht Leeds. So congratulations on that. He's on there every Thursday, 11 to 12 Eastern Standard Time. And nice to have you with us, Gerald.
Well, thank you. Every Wednesday, actually.
Wednesday, sorry. Gerald, tell us about how we got it all wrong in the American media and why that's an important trend to look at, what we've been doing by regime change in Syria, in Libya, and other countries.
Well, the media is nothing more than, as we call them, prostitutes. You know, they put out for the Wall Street gang and the D.C. gang. And you can, I mean, you talk about fake news, and of course, without going over all the details, from the Vietnam War to Serbia to Iraq and on, they keep pumping out fake news and getting us into war based on lies. And what you were talking about with Aleppo, for example, the New York Times, they like to call themselves the paper of record. I prefer to call them the toilet paper of record because of the propaganda they put out, and the only thing that paper is good for is exactly what I said. They'll be putting out stories over and over again on what's going on in Aleppo, blaming the Russians and the Syrians without ever pointing to the people responsible for it, particularly the Americans, along with the Saudis, as you pointed out, and Qatar and the Arab League. But what they've failed to do in the New York Times is to equally cover what's going on in Mosul as we speak. The slaughter being, again, led by Obama, who had promised no boots on the ground, folks, back in Iraq, and we have about 10,000 plus there. And this is a city about almost twice the size of Aleppo, under massive attack and massive slaughter. Not a word. Not a word about what's going on in Yemen and how the United States is behind that war as well, supporting Saudi Arabia, and Obama selling the Saudis more weapons than any other previous president in the United States, slaughtering innocent people. And what should also be noted, because, of course, there's attention deficit disorder, is that the Saudis announced that war from Washington in 2015, in March. Could you imagine? They announced that war, the ambassador, of Saudi Arabia announcing it from Washington, D.C., and our government supporting them with armaments, including cluster bombs, including, of course, all the weapons that are slaughtering. That's about 25,000 people now, doesn't make any of the news. So what happened, Gary, they're coming out with this fake news because the mainstream media was humiliated by how wrong they called it with Trump. And as you well know, and everybody listening out there, every major newspaper in America supported Clinton. And of course, I'm not taking a stand on this. I'm just saying what is. So they got it all wrong. So now they're coming out with the fake news. And I would like to make this very clear. Google is one of the greatest perpetrators of fake news. They defended someone who had the Gerald Celante blog spot. They refused to take it down as this person was defaming me We had to take him to court in New York City, the Second District Court, the place where you have to take, you know, for these kind of actions, that's where you go. It cost me about $130,000, had to hire a major New York City law firm, because Google refused to take down a website that was defaming me, that was putting out fake news. So as long as they were getting money from this, this page had about 27 million page views, that's okay. So they're hypocrites. So they're selling this fake news story because they lost, so they're trying to defame others. And as you were going over the list of ISIS, how about the statement that came out just 2 days ago from Turkish President Erdogan, who accused the United States and saying, quote, now they give support, being the United States, to terrorist groups, including Daesh, which is ISIS. It is very clear we have confirmed evidence with pictures, photos, and videos. Why isn't the media covering that? You have to get that from Al Jazeera or Russia Today. So the United States is behind the slaughter going on, and the liberals out there, oh, they're all upset about Trump winning. And, of course, I'm no Trump fan, but he says enough of this toppling governments. But yet the liberals are all crying because they supported the murderer, Hillary Clinton, who laughed when asked how did she feel when Gaddafi was dead. We came, we saw he died. She laughs. The liberals support that murder in Libya. They support the murder in Syria. They support the murder in Iraq. They support the murder in Afghanistan because November 8th was the saddest day of their lives because the murderers in chief that they supported, what, could no longer slaughter people?
Okay, Gerald, let's move on to a few other important issues that I'm concerned about. There's one big one that no one is paying attention to. We've known that about 7 million factory jobs, industrial jobs, have been lost in the last 35 years. That does not include other workers in other industries, and that's what's created the Great Rust Belt that has only gotten worse, not better. Now in comes a man to head the Labor Department, and this Andrew Puzder, Secretary of Labor, he's made his reputation off exploiting labor. And what he said, here's what he said about the future. And this is why you should be very concerned. Quote, they're always polite. They're always upsell. They never take a vacation. They never show up late. There's never a slip and fall or an age, sex, or race discrimination lawsuit. Okay. They also never take lunch or toilet breaks. They'll work 24 hours a day, and they don't have to be paid. So out with the workers and in with the robots. Now, I'm saying, he didn't say that first part. He said, but what we're not looking at is that you don't have to look overseas for where many of the jobs are going and have gone. They're going to robotics, the so-called IT, the intelligent machines. For example, Gerald, for every ATM machine that's on every block about in many areas, you lose 3 bank tellers. And now they're figuring out, well, what about the very skilled laborers? Now they have robotics. They're developing higher-end skills, not just factory assembly line skills. We have the first self-driving cars, and that's going to cost anywhere between 3 to 4 million jobs right there. They're mainly going to be for cab drivers and long-distance truckers to begin with. And also, a report that came out concluded 47% of existing jobs in the United States are vulnerable to automation in the upcoming near future. So take us on your insight about trends, about what we're going to be seeing, a really evisceration of many of the existing jobs by robotics here in the United States.
Well, there's no question about it. We're going from industrialization to robotization. But I want to stay on the factory jobs for just a moment. Take a look at Germany. About 25% of their GDP is from manufacturing-based. And yes, they have robotics. As a matter of fact, China bought out the most sophisticated robot company in Germany and probably bought out the most in the world. But what's happening in the United States is the jobs that they're sending down to Mexico and other places, they're not putting in robots or sophisticated manufacturing techniques to increase productivity. What they're doing is they're just hiring more slave labor. So when companies move down there or over there, it's not as though they're upgrading and jobs are being lost to automation. They're not. They're being lost to cheap labor. The reality, of course, is, yes, we're going to see more and more jobs lost in robotization. You talked about driverless cars. We don't see that coming up for a while. What we do see are driverless trucks, places with routes, or driverless buses where you have a route. But it's going to take years for that. So there's no question that we're going to lose jobs, and a lot of them are going to be menial jobs that you really don't need people to do, but you start creating new economies. And that's what's being lost, because when you look at what's going on in the corporate world and why you have these great corporate profits, is that the money that they're making and the money that they're borrowing, rather than reinvesting it into the corporations, they're just buying back their stocks. That's what's driving up the prices, particularly during this Trump rally. So if they were reinvesting into future development, we would be creating new jobs and new industries that we don't know are going to exist. And that's what's being missed, because the money, again, is just, you know the numbers. I mean, a new number just came out yesterday about how more of the wealth has been concentrated in the hands of the very few. And that goes back to the corporate culture. So, yes, you're going to see expansion in robotization and a whole new world. But one of our top trends, VRED, virtual reality education. The education system we have is based on the industrial age model. Now you could create a whole new model. That's going to take a whole new industry to develop. But the money's not going in there.
If you look at the high-speed transit in Japan, China, probably the leader, also in Germany, and in France, we have nothing even on the drawing boards, and yet look how that would cut down on pollution. Look how it would help with creation of jobs. Look at how it would help make a safer and easier way of getting around the United States. What do you see happening with high-speed transportation?
It's going to be very slow, even when people talk about, you know, Trump putting stimulus measures in. I mean, what's the U.S. Budget? It's almost, what, about $3.8, $3.9 trillion. He's going to put $100 billion a year over 10 years. Obama put $831 billion into fiscal stimulus. It doesn't do anything. So unless there's a real redirection, it's not going to happen. But I'm more confident, and again, I'm not a Trump fan, but his business is business. There should be a law that politicians should not be able to run for office, because the only reason they go in is to fulfill their ego in there and their psychopathic and sociopathic mindset. So when you get a business guy in there, at least they can see how we're going to make money out of this. So possibly under him, but still it's a long way away. We don't see it really on the top of the agenda, particularly when he says he's going to spend more money with the military, and we're already spending what? And with the budget that we're allowed to see, almost $620 billion, and he wants to make it bigger.
Last question, Gerald. We're now at 20,000 on the equity market, on the Wall Street market. We all know that's a bubble. We know all bubbles burst, as they have in the past. The dot-com bubble burst, the subprime housing burst. What do you see happening? How do you see it happening? And what do you see the consequences being over the next 24 months?
Well, 24 months is rough, but we've reversed our forecast, Gary. We were very negative on the economy, but we've changed that. And with Trump coming in, and again, only, you know, there's that saying, the trend is your friend. So if he's going to cut taxes for corporations, you know, it's going to, again, they're going to use a lot of the money for stock buybacks, and particularly with that stock holiday as well. So we see a stronger dollar, and a stronger dollar isn't good for gold, but a stronger dollar is very bad for the global economy, particularly the Chinese and the emerging markets. You're seeing their currencies going way down, and they have to pay back some $10 trillion worth of cheap money that they borrowed in dollars. So the dollar gets stronger, their currency gets weaker, they're going to be in a financial crisis. But this is different in this boom in the sense that when you go to the dot-com boom, when you go to the real estate boom, those were built up on speculation and fraud. This is being, again, built up because of stock buybacks and merger and acquisition activity. Will there be a correction? Yes. We don't see, in the absence of some kind of a major crisis, a 2008 or 2000 dot-com bubble burst in the next, we're going to say, about 12 months.
Okay. Gerald, thank you for coming on. And people can read all of Gerald's trends in all areas of the world by picking up the Trends Journal, and his website is trendsresearch.com, as well as OccupyPeaceUS.us. Thank you, Gerald Celante, for being on.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you and everyone.
I'm Gary Nall. That's the end of our program today. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.